in every business, there is a sweet spot, and the sweet spot is the where you have exactly the right type of customer that suits your business model, and that customer is willing to pay you a price that allows you to make a fair and reasonable margin.
You're listening to Season 2 of Not Another Business Show with your host, Tracy Sheen.
Basically, it is about niching. It's the sweet spot. Now, the way I describe the sweet spot is that if you take two ends of the spectrum, you could probably sell, and let's say you were selling books, you could probably sell a million books to a whole bunch of people if you sold them for 1 cent each. But you might not necessarily make a profit if it was costing you 10 cents to print them. At the other end of the spectrum, there might be one person who is willing to pay you several hundred thousand dollars for the book because that was exactly what they needed. And I know that's an extreme example, but just run with me for a moment. In every business, there is a sweet spot, and the sweet spot is the where you have exactly the right type of customer that suits your business model, and that customer is willing to pay you a price that allows you to make a fair and reasonable margin. In other words, to live well and make a profit and be prosperous and, you know, achieve your goals in your business. Another example might be custom-made furniture versus buying stuff from IKEA. So you might go and pay $5,000 for a handmade table, and for the guy making those handmade tables, he may only have 10 or 20 customers a year, but for him, that's his sweet spot. The trick, of course, is matching your sweet spot and finding those customers and finding a way to communicate with them. But for every business, there is one, and I've seen it in my own business.
Niching. To find an activity or situation that is specifically suited to a person's interests, abilities, or nature. It's another one of those buzzwords that gets thrown around business books, blogs, and courses all the time. The idea that you need to drill down and find that certain group of people that are absolutely in need of your particular product or service. The idea being, once you've found them, you can create your entire business offering to satisfy that particular group of clients' requirements. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 8, where today my guests and I are exploring the concept of niching. Is it a good idea? Will it bring you more business? Or does it simply talk your business out of a whole stack of clients? Show we heard from Hunter Leonard from Blue Frog Marketing. Now, a big chunk of what Hunter helps his clients with is to identify their own niche within a business. He explained to me that after 15 years of helping business owners with their strategic marketing, one of the commonalities he sees with new clients approaching him is that they're struggling to get new clients through the door. Niching, or being able to identify which clients your business best serves, is a way to help turn that lead generation tap on. So where does he start? What's the process for helping to figure out where your business niche actually lies?
Well, the first thing I tend to do is listen a lot, really. I ask lots of questions and then listen to the answers. So it's really important for me to recommend strategies that are going to get the owner to where they want to be rather than where the business could go in many directions. I've got an example now of a client that I've been working with for 10 odd years, and his own direction and goals have changed in the last 10 years. He's had a young family when we first started working together. They've now grown up. He's now starting to think about his succession planning and his retirement and those sorts of things. So we get into conversations that sometimes nothing to do with marketing, but they're really about understanding where the person's trying to head with the business, whether they want to really rapidly grow their top line, or do they just want to stay small and be profitable, or what sort of customers they actually want to have, who are their best customers now. So it can end up being quite a wide-ranging conversation about life and other things to do with marketing, and that just helps me sort of get my head around understanding the person, because for me it's really important to work with people that I like to work with and for them to like me, because if that's not there, it's really hard to get a really good working dynamic anyway. So we end up talking about a lot of stuff. I do have a very formal audit document that I go through where I'm looking to understand what components of the marketing are already in place. So obviously trying not to reinvent the wheel. So there's a formal part to it as well. But it really ends up being about asking a lot of questions and then just listening a lot, which I find is probably the best skill I have as a strategic marketer, is to listen, because then it makes it easy when you present a solution to someone that it matches what they're trying to achieve anyway.
Asking lots of questions and figuring out where a business owner wants to take the business, that all makes sense. The more information you have, the better the outcome is going to be. But this made me realize I probably started at second base with this conversation. Because while I'm familiar with the term niching for business and the circle of people I associate with are all familiar, I wondered how common a concept it actually was for business owners. So here's Hunter again with his take on it.
Yeah, I don't think business owners really do know about it. I don't think that's changed a lot. There's certainly obviously a lot of change in the channels of marketing where people communicate, and you know, the emergence of more online marketing and more social media and all those things. But business owners seem to be about the same place they were 15 years ago. They're not overly strategic in the way they think. They tend to be, and I'm not saying this is it's a terrible generalization, isn't it? There's a lot of great business owners out there running good businesses, but the ones that end up calling us in, the commonality is that they really don't know how to get new customers. It's one of their big issues. They have strategic issues like cash flow and other things occurring, often as a result of the fact that they haven't marketed themselves well in the past. So, you know, bad cash flow is often a function of not having really promoted yourself out there and you're not having you don't have enough flow of new customers coming through. So you're always sort of chasing your tail. So I don't think business owners have got smarter about strategy in the last 15 years, in my opinion. The surveys, we run surveys quite a lot, and the answers to those and the percentages haven't really changed much. What has changed is an increasing level of confusion about the options available to people in terms of marketing. You know, 15 years ago it was TV, radio, direct mail, bit of advertising, bit of PR, bit of local print media, and now they've got about 500 more choices, and I think they just feel worse off now than they did 15 years ago.
Interesting, right? In Hunter's view, business owners tend to only get strategic about marketing their business when there's a big issue like cash flow. So let's assume for a moment that you are one of those business owners who has never really given too much thought to niching. Or maybe you have, but you just don't know where you need to start. Hunter shared this great tip on how to get yourself started in figuring out your own business niche.
Well, there's two areas I get them to start straight away. Number one, if they've got a list of existing clients, I get them to do research of their existing clients. And there's behavioral and attitude stuff that we do there, which is basically, what do the customers think of them? What do they think they do well? What do they think they do poorly? How likely would they be to refer that business to a friend or colleague, depending on whether it's consumer or business-based? So we try and get them to do a benchmark of the existing customer base. And a business could have 10 customers or they could have 1,000, but it doesn't really matter. You should research the existing customers, because that can be the cheapest way to grow a business, is to either get them to refer you or sell more to them already. It's interesting how little businesses use their databases and how little they survey their customers. So that's a good starting point.
There you have it. Assuming you've been in business for a while and you have a database to call on, create yourself a quick survey. And there are plenty of free or cheap online tools to help you do this, like SurveyMonkey. But create yourself a little survey that checks in with your clients. But what about those businesses who are just starting out? They have no database to call on, and quite possibly they're bootstrapping their entry into business. What these owners tend to have is time up their sleeves. time where they can get out and chat to people to find out what their market is really looking for in a solution. Hunter refers to this as paid research.
In fact, I would almost call that paid research, because sometimes you have to do a lot of research and not get paid for it. So I would certainly, with people starting their business straight away, and often when people start their own business, they've got a good idea. And look, there's so many good ideas in Australian business these days, and there always has been. We're a very innovative bunch. However, you also see examples where somebody, say, they think they've got a great idea and they go and spend $100,000 fitting out a shop front, do all the work of getting all the product in, and up until that point, they haven't actually spoken to a customer. So if somebody's bootstrapping and all they've got is time, the first thing I would say to them is make sure you invest that time in understanding customers. And that means talking to lots of people, doing the research yourself. And there's lots of relatively cheap ways of researching lots of people these days. You know, companies like SurveyMonkey and things have panels where you can, for a couple of $1,000, you can probably research a couple hundred people in your target audience. So, but there's no replacement for going and talking to the types of people that you want as your customer. And if you're not really sure who that type is, then that might be talking to a few different types.
Now we've spent some time getting some of the theory behind how and why you would want to spend time figuring out your business niche, I wanted to look at a few business owners I know who have created some very tight, very specific niches for their business. And the reason I wanted to do this is because one of the biggest arguments I hear against niching is that if you go too tight, you'll never find customers. Well, here's what I've learned about niching over the last few years. Think of it as a bullseye on a target board. Ideally, you want to be able to get so specific that you can create a client avatar with name, age, gender, location, and as many personality traits as possible. Why? So that when you're creating marketing collateral or any kind of content, you can write everything to that one person. This allows you to speak directly to your ideal client. Let me give you an example. Remember Jason Mallowan, the headshot photographer from episode 2 on personal branding?
My portfolio was a standard website where you see somebody with their industrial and their food and their portraits and their products. And yeah, I was a really generalist. But I realized that my true strength in anything is working with people. And I realized that I love making portraits for people. That's still quite broad. I knew very quickly that I didn't want to deal with families, babies, children, weddings, domestic stuff. So that was pretty easy to narrow that down, but that's still quite broad. I guess I realized that I have this, I don't know, it's kind of a superpower to really get insane magic out of people during a headshot. My other stuff it's brilliant work, but it's not quite as unique. It's not quite as obviously, when you see a Jason Mallowan headshot, you go, oh, that's a Jason Mallowan headshot. If you see one of my portraits, you go, oh, that's an amazing portrait, like out on location, whatever, whatever. But it's not so distinctly mine, and the headshots are just distinctly mine. And when I realized that, I realized I had to own that niche. I had to choose that and kind of dominate that.
Now, as you've probably guessed hearing Jason a few times, he's a man of pure modesty. But he's absolutely right. When you see a Jason Mallowan headshot, you know it's a Jason Mallowan headshot. So it really is about figuring out not only what area of your business do you absolutely love more than any other, it's also about realizing that you need to absolutely own and dominate one particular area so you can build your brand and your reputation and your content around that one thing. Does that mean Jason no longer does any other kind of photography work? Absolutely not. In fact, he's recently back from a trip to Papua New Guinea with Oxfam. How did that happen? because he became known as the go-to headshot photographer. I wanted to know from Jason, when you're trying to figure out your niche, from his experience, did headshot photography pick him, or did he just have to pick one thing and headshots were it?
The process actually came from the business side of it. Yes, it did, in a sense that the advice I was getting was know a thing, niche your thing, pick a thing and own that thing. And the thing that I want to own is not ownable. It's because the stuff that I love to do more than anything, the stuff that really gets me the most excited, are these half day, full day, on location, epic portrait projects for people that are fully customized and totally unique. And I mean, that's the stuff that really gets me going. Part of what we do is the headshots as well, but you can't own that. I mean, you can be a figure in that community, but the stuff that I'm doing with headshots, it's just so distinct. It's instantly recognizable. And I don't want to say backed into a corner, but that I had to just take it in that direction and just try to own that direction.
Selecting your niche then needs to be driven from both sides. It's a commercial decision so you can drive your business, but it also comes from an aspect of your business that still gives you that internal knowing. I know, that can all sound a little woo-woo, but you know what I mean. I'm yet to meet a business owner or entrepreneur who doesn't have one real area of their business that is their favorite child against the others. And that's a pretty good indicator you're onto something. Katrina Pollard from CP Communications is an expert in PR, and you'll be hearing plenty more from her in coming episodes. But Katrina shared an interesting story around how she developed her niche that I really wanted to share. Because when we're talking about niching down and whether it was a worthwhile exercise, she admitted that it took her a lot of time and she made a few mistakes along the way. Now, while Katrina refers to this process as building her personal brand in this particular space, make no mistake, she is describing exactly what it took for her to identify a niche that she could own.
A lot of hard work. I really want to say that. The first thing that comes to my mind when you ask that question is a lot of hard work. Really, I got to the point where I realized that there's so much competition. I mean, there's so much more competition now than what there was when I first started. And I feel like most people are in that situation. The people that you want to do business with, or people that want to do business with you, are the people that have already built trust with you. They've already kind of have an idea. They've heard about you. They read about you in the paper. They have some kind of idea around how they think and feel about you. What I wanted to do was go, you know what? I know that I need to build my personal brand in the space that I'm really good at and that I do every single day, which is at that time public relations. You know, I was one of the first people doing social media. They read about it and I found out about it and I loved it at the very beginning. So it was, I added that to my, into my platform. And so what I did, and I still do, is that every single thing that I do comes back to that one niche, what, public relations and social media. So every article I wrote was on either public relations or social media. Every single speech that I did was public relations or social media. Every single media interview, public relations and social media. Like, I did not deviate from that because, and I did that over years, because what I wanted to do was have my name automatically linked with public relations and social media, just because I went out there and spoke and wrote and, you know, interviewed on that. And so when people go, well, I need a public relations person. Oh, I know. I've read about this Katrina Pollard, and build that referral. And so that's what I teach other people to do, is like, you start with your platform and then you build. It's kind of religiously have that ripple effect of sharing your stories and your knowledge on that topic.
The big thing Katrina shared there is something anyone who is looking to develop their niche needs to know. These things take time, and most likely you'll make a few mistakes along the way. But here's the thing. Every time you make a mistake, you're one step closer to absolutely knowing, identifying, and nailing your niche. Claire Harrison from Harrison Human Resources shared another valuable piece about niching her own business, which is relevant to all of us. And that's around the financial aspects of her own business. But I'll let Claire explain what she discovered during her niching process.
So I've been consulting for 6 years. So I have the benefit of having experience of having worked with a variety of clients to know what's going to work well for me. So when I first started consulting, I did do a lot of work with micro business, so the under five, which is lovely and very fulfilling. But from a building a HR business, they don't have an ongoing HR requirement. I'm spent on attracting them and managing them like any other client, but their spend is lower. So therefore, you move into small business. So we really focus on small and medium-sized business. We look ideally from anything from 10, 15 up to about 70, 80, because the benefit of that type of client, in based on my experience, is that they have an immediate HR need. They're starting to feel the pain around managing people, or the understanding that they, if they can really leverage their people, it's going to make a difference to their lives and to their business. So that's where we can kick in. And the benefit, the other side, is that they have an ongoing need for HR. So rather than just coming in and saying writing contracts and a policy manual done, they have ongoing needs. They realize they're going to have a performance management system in place. They'll need some training done. They'll have needs for constant recruitment and induction. A lot of our clients we focus on are in growth phase. So with that presents certain challenges. So we do a lot of work about putting new structures in place and scoping what the types of people that they need. So for me, that the experience, I suppose, is what has worked and what I get fulfillment from. So by niching more on that higher end of small and medium sized, it means that we can have a long-term relationship with them, and I like that. So I get to build a long-term partnership with them, that we constantly are coming in and working with them and become part of their team. So that's also something that I enjoy and get fulfillment from.
So when you are considering what your own niche may look like for your business, make sure you heed Claire's experience and ensure that whichever area of your own business you choose to specialize in has the potential to be a profitable area for your business. In fact, it was the one thing that Claire said to me that she wished she'd known before she got into business for herself.
I probably would have done more research to establish what my niche is and trying to determine some of these things about what I just said. Starting out, I just got a lot of work straight up from people I already knew and referrals, so it sort of came easy to me to start with, but that wasn't a business model that worked for me. So the point came a couple of years ago that that really wasn't working for me, and I had to really re-examine what my target market and niche is to make it a profitable business moving forward that I could grow, that was able to be grown. So I wish I had looked into more, doing more work from the beginning in terms of what the niche is, that ideal client, and projecting that out in terms of what that meant from a business growth perspective.
Interesting, isn't it? The power that hindsight can offer. And certainly Claire feels as though a little more pre-work on identifying her niche may have been useful in her overall business projections. Now, because I deem it as my job when putting these episodes together to give you a complete look at what a topic like niching may mean to your business, I wanted to find someone who may not necessarily agree with the whole concept of drilling down to find that one thing in your business and owning it. Fortunately, I didn't have to look too far, as Dan Norris, you know, the founder of WP Curve and Black Hops Brewing, author of The 7-Day Startup and Content Machine, advises people that they really need to keep their options open when it comes to creating a business niche.
I just don't like the idea of the alternative. I just don't think the idea of going into a small niche makes a lot of sense most of the time. I think people take that advice so much that it's detrimental to them. Like that, like they end up starting these businesses doing a whole bunch of marketing that's sort of general, like, you know, like putting out a whole bunch of content on social networks that are available to the whole world, building a network of influencers around the whole world, but then having a really small, tight niche product that no one can recommend. And to me, it makes no sense. Like in my world, if someone came to me and said, I'm a local bookkeeper on the Gold Coast in Australia, I'd love you to refer me some work. I can't refer that person any work at all. Like, I just can't do that. Whereas if someone came to me and said, I've started a service that is 24/7 unlimited monthly bookkeeping for zero, and we service the whole world, that's a massive market of people, and I can refer them loads of customers, and we get referred loads of customers because people don't have to be asking questions like, you know, do they do this, do they do that, you know, are they available in this time zone, do they support this platform. I think it's okay to like focus on one specific thing, but I don't like the idea of niching so small that no one can refer you anything and you can't get that value from your marketing and you're going to hit a ceiling. And what do you do when you hit that ceiling? You're going to have to pivot, or you're going to have to do something, and that's going to halt your momentum. And the only reason we've grown to any reasonable size is because we've had nonstop momentum from the start. And that's what happens with other startups that grow. They get on this momentum curve and they just ride that thing, and everything becomes so much easier. And if you're setting yourself up in a business where you're guaranteeing that you're going to hit some sort of ceiling and put a halt to that momentum, that just seems unnecessary to me.
Dan always shares such solid advice, and I do take what he has to say about becoming so niched that people cannot refer you business. So when you're working on your niche, make sure to run the sanity checker over it and ask yourself, is this something that makes me easily referable within my circle? To wind up today's show, though, I wanted to loop back to Hunter. He spends so much of his time helping businesses to strategically market their business and to help them identify their own niche. So I was keen to find out how he applied his own process to drill down and figure out the niche that best worked for his own business.
It's a really good question, actually, because we made a few mistakes along the way, as you always do when you're running your own business. And it came down to, I suppose I'll start at the end and come backwards, but what we worked out was that the best type of business for us to work with was either someone, a business that was owned privately by someone, and that person was the person engaging it. So effectively working directly with the business owner. It didn't work where we were working for someone who wasn't the business owner, so someone further down the organizing chart, if you like. We often found that it slowed up decision making, and we got into issues of having to deal with more than one decision maker. So it pretty much came very quickly to working with someone who was the business owner or someone who was in direct control of the whole decision making process. So in the case of our first client, which was Smorgon Steel and the Cyclone Fencing brand, the guy that ran it was in full charge of the P&L, and he basically ran his own division and didn't need to go to anyone else to get decisions made. So we found that working with someone who could trust us to be the marketer, who handed over the reins to do that, they might have been time poor or they knew they couldn't do it themselves, and ran the business or had the decision making, turned out to be the best for us. Along the way, we made some mistakes. You know, we worked with some startups that really didn't have much budget or money, and we got some bad debt with some of those businesses because they ran into trouble. So it's like anything, you get a few blood noses and bruises and you work out who you're best working with. And as it turns out, a lot of those guys that run their own businesses have ended up being clients for many, many years, and they're friends now as well as clients. I think it was the right call in the end.
There you have it. For what it's worth, after listening to all of our guests today, I'm more convinced than ever that taking the time to discover your own business niche is a smart move. Obviously, you need to run a few filters that our guests shared today, such as making sure that whatever niche you choose will be a profitable one for your business, and that in choosing a particular niche, you will make your business easier, not harder, for people to refer work to you. But by and large, it seems the time and the effort to figure this niching thing out is time well spent. A big thanks to this week's guests, Hunter Leonard from Blue Frog Marketing, Jason Mallowan from The Portrait Store, Katrina Pollard from CP Communications, Claire Harrison from Harrison Human Resources, Dan Norris, founder of WP Curve, Black Hops Brewing, and author of 7-Day Startup and Content Machine. And last but not least, Australia's number one small business author and all-round Mr. Nice Guy, Andrew Griffiths. Where was Andrew, you say? Well, hang around and you'll find out. As always, though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. If you've enjoyed today's show, then please share it with your friends and consider leaving an iTunes review. It's super quick, super easy, and means that we get to reach more people. You can also check out my LinkedIn page for the companion article, Lessons from the Masters on Niching, just in case you want a quick gold nugget guide to all the good stuff. I'm not leaving you with a quote today. Instead, I'm leaving you with something that Andrew Griffiths shared with me around people who claim their niche and absolutely dominate it. He refers to these people as the one percenters, and it's something I think as small business owners and entrepreneurs, we all should aspire to.
I think the one percenters for me are those businesses that really have a deep burning passion to be the best at what they do. They just seem to get it right. They have a commitment to doing the little things that go the extra mile all the time. And I think the reason that they stand out so much is because many businesses really are kind of mediocre. And I hate to say that. I don't like to be negative about anything around the small business space. But I think that it's such a rarity that we encounter a business where we go, they were amazing. Everything about them was incredible. I can't believe it. And it's always little things that make the difference when it comes to being a one percenter. So I actually do work with businesses in an attempt to try and help them to become that one percenter. And I think that if you achieve that, you become the go-to business that everyone automatically refers you, and happy days. You get the business that you want. You get the customers that you want. You get to charge what you want. You get all of the above. But you have to aspire to being the best in your space, your town, your niche, whatever it might be.
Not Another Business Show is edited and produced by Corporate Podcast Productions. Let your story be heard.